Latin America is an enormous part of the world. With so many different countries and cultures all mixed together, my wife and I have been traveling through Latin America and South America here and visiting different countries and cities and having a blast. We've eaten all sorts of delicious food. And today, my wife is going to be coming on the show and talking about some of her favorite experiences together. Let's get started. Welcome, welcome to the Nomadic Foodist Show, a podcast for the food and travel obsessed. My name is Chris, your host, and I help people discover amazing food all around the world. I am super excited. This is going to be part one of an amazing duo podcast with my wife, Tierra. We are going to talk about some of our experiences so far through Latin America. We started off in Mexico and made our way through Peru, Argentina, Chile, and now we're in Bogota, Colombia. So lots of great places, lots of food stories, and things we've learned along the way. We're going to talk about some of our favorite dishes and a few of the surprising aspects that we may not have been expecting when we were hitting these different cities. So here is my conversation with my amazing, beautiful, and wonderful wife, Tierra. All right, so we are here with a very special episode with my amazing and super beautiful and amazingly wonderful wife. We are doing this show together to talk about some of our adventures in South America. We've been kind of going on for the past 5 months. And so here is my awesome, wonderful wife, Tierra.
Hello, everybody. It's nice to not meet you all. It's nice to be on the show. Yeah, I'm super excited to talk about our travels because it's been super duper fun and I love reminiscing, especially with my husband. So this podcast episode might be a little goofy.
Yeah, we're just going to kind of go over some of the highlights, I guess, and talk about what we've learned and a little bit about what we can do in the future for ourselves and what we're planning on doing for travels next year and everything. So, babe, what have been some of your favorite things? Let's start off with Mexico City.
Oh,
we started off there in September, I think.
We got there September 14th. Oh my gosh. I love Mexico City so much. I'm part Mexican, I guess. We call ourselves Chicanos or Chicanas, where we have Mexican descent. So I'm very familiar with all of those flavors. And I grew up with Mexican candy and just my dad would make carne asada and menudo and we'd make tamales for New Year's. So it was finally nice to go to Mexico and just kind of experience it all because their street food is crazy. Like if you're in the U.S. or if you're from the U.S., you don't really have street food as much as a lot of people like to think. Like street food in Mexico City is super different and it's super cheap. Like I remember the one thing that I really miss that I actually talked about today with Chris was this zucchini flour quesadilla. It's just one of the most amazing things. And it was like $1, $2. And
yeah, barely anything, it seems.
Oh my gosh.
Well, it's crazy because the quesadillas, it was everything was right there in front of us, just on the street corner. So you had someone kind of making the tortillas and then someone else handling the money and then someone else filling it and, you know, crisping up the outside. And it's crazy. And we got like the zucchini flour one and then we got the chicharron one. And the chicharron isn't actually like a fried crispy pork skin. It is pork skin, but it's like cooked and it's soft. And then it's in like this really dark, I don't know, pepper sauce or something like that.
I don't know. It was delicious. Oh my gosh. I mean, if you haven't gone to Mexico City or if like, it's hard because when you grow up in the U.S., you kind of hear, oh, Mexico is really dangerous, you know, cartels, you know, you're going to get kidnapped. Like, these are the things, at least I've heard. Honestly, I kind of felt safer in the neighborhood we were in, Mexico City, than kind of in the neighborhood where we live in Denver. It's just,
yeah,
it's just so amazing. Like, the neighborhood we stayed in, it was called
San Rafael.
Yeah, yeah. And it was just like this cute little local spot, like right down the stairs. There was this cute little fruit man, like with this cart. And so we'd get fruit from him every day. Oh, it was the best, like get some watermelon and cucumber and he'd squish some lime and some chili on there. It was the best.
So when it comes to safety in Mexico City, I know that was a big thing for us. I mean, you said you felt safer a lot of times in our neighborhood that we were in Mexico City than I guess where we live in Denver. So why'd you feel so safe?
A good telltale sign that you're in a safer neighborhood is, you know, when older people are walking around by themselves, people are walking their dogs, women are walking by themselves, children are playing on the streets. And granted, we have that in our neighborhood, but I don't know how to put this. Like, we have a gun problem in our city. Like, our population in Denver has grown immensely, and our violent crime has gone up along with it. So, I mean, at least in that neighborhood in Mexico, like, we'd mm-hmm. walk around. I can walk around by myself.
Yeah, well, what about the food now? So, I know we kind of, like, briefly touched on the quesadilla. So, the zucchini quesadilla, why did you like that? What did it taste like to you?
Like magic. It's just, I'm not super great at describing food, but I will do my best. Oh my goodness. It's just so many textures. It was nice. Like, the outside was kind of like crispy. And then when you took a bite out of it, it was like this delicious kind of salty, melty, like cheese. And I don't know, like the zucchini flour added some sort of, I don't know.
It's hard.
It's magic. That's the only thing I could describe it as.
Well, these tortillas are made from blue corn. And it's cool. Like seriously, you see them with their hands. They go into the masa. They, you know, stretch it out with their hands and they kind of flap it back and forth. And you have this nice elongated tortilla. And then they put it on the plancha, the like flat top, I guess, grill thing that they have going on. And they start to crisp up the outside. And then they put in the fillings, this really nice stringy cheese. And the zucchini flowers, if you're unfamiliar, you can actually eat them. So when zucchinis grow, there is a flower that sprouts with the vegetable. So the zucchini flowers are taken off, they're marinated, and I think they're maybe put in like water, maybe a little bit of vinegar. I'm not sure, but just to kind of have viewers understand is like, just imagine you, I guess, eating a cheese kind of quesadilla with a bowl of like flower petals, you know, like right next to you, and you kind of smell it. Because it tasted a little bit bitter, which was nice because the cheese is super, super stringy and fatty and delicious.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And then you have like just like that slight aromatic of like flowers on the back, which is really cool. And I don't know, I've never had anything quite like that. And then you had like that blue corn tortilla. And it's pretty cool when you have the blue corn. It just tastes a little bit different. It tastes less like corn. And it tastes a little bit more savory, a little bit less sweet, a little bit more savory. It's kind of hard to describe like a blue corn, but that's kind of the best way in my mind how it works.
Oh, man. See, that's a way better explanation than mine. I was just like, oh, it was magic. This is the best thing in the entire world, honestly, because when we travel and there's zucchini flowers, you know, it's very specific. Usually people only like stuff the zucchini flower with like ricotta and then like bread it and then fry it. And so, I mean, yes, that's delicious, but to have the zucchini flour just kind of not be stuffed with something, I don't know. It was beautiful. Once we took that first bite, that's the best part, is when we eat something super delicious, we'll look at each other in amazement. We're like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. Like, this is so good. How is this possible? Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, so I wrote about this too. So everything that we talk about in this podcast, I'll have links to the show notes. So if you want to try the same restaurants in the same dishes, you can go to the show notes of the page and it'll have all those really important details in there. So
you should totally do it. Yes. Eat at the same places as we do and then tag us in the picture so we can be hungry. I mean, just talking about food, even this just makes me hungry. And we had a huge lunch today.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's cool when you find something that's really delicious, something you haven't tried before. And Mexico City, in my opinion, rivals almost every other one we've been to when it comes to street food and the availability and the different varieties that are there. It feels like almost every single street and every single street corner has someone selling something, whether it be popcorn, a quesadilla, a taco, a torta, some sort of drink, even when it's just like Sprite or Squirt, the soda Squirt.
Squirt. And oh my goodness. Yeah.
Just like with lots of lime and salt. It's so delicious. So there's somebody selling something on every single street, it feels like, everywhere we went throughout Mexico City.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the reasons why I think I like Mexico City so much is because me and my family grew up as snackers. We just like to munch on things kind of all day. And so it seems like so today down in Mexico City, because like you said, like literally everywhere there's something to eat. It's the best. Like, I know this isn't a street food, but this is probably one of my favorite things that I was able to get down there was right below our apartment was this chicharrones place. And they sold chicharrones like by the sheets. Like, he talked about this on one of his other episodes, but like legitimately like a sheet of fried pork.
What do you mean a sheet?
It was like a baking sheet size. Yeah. You know, it was like a 3/4 inch thick. Like, it, I almost ate the whole thing, honestly. I think I got it for my birthday.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I deserve a whole baking sheet size worth of chicharrones. Like, this is perfect. And
yeah, well, this whole like rectangular, really crispy piece of pork skin. And you can just dive into it. And when it's freshly fried and you get it, it's a lot different than like, if you get like pork rinds or something, you know, it's a lot different.
I think I always thought pork rinds were different. You know, growing up in my neighborhood in Denver, it's a very high Hispanic area. And so the grocery store that we used to go to as a kid, it was called Grocery Warehouse. And so when I'd go shopping with my mom in the deli, they would have freshly made chicharrones. And so they would give out free samples. And I'd be like, oh, mom, let's go get some samples. And it was just like the best flavor in my mouth because I love, even though it might sound gross, like I like the way fat kind of melts into my mouth. Yes. It's a weird sensation. A lot of people don't like it, but I really like the fat. And it was honestly, once I saw that chicharrones sheet, I was like, I'm in heaven. Like, this is the coolest thing ever.
Well, it's so cool when you have the freshly made ones, because anyone who's tried something fried and it gets kind of old, it has this kind of stale crunch to it. And that's what I feel like most of the time we experience if we get the pre-made chicharron or if we get pork rinds. It's one of those weird crunchy sensations, and it's good because that's all we know. But then you try something like this, where it's this freshly fried thing. It really is this disintegrating, super crispy thing, and you can eat a lot of it, surprisingly, without feeling too overwhelmed. Or maybe you can just squirt some lime on there, too. It's always really nice.
That's the best part. Like, that's the best part, because it doesn't weigh you down, and that's why they sell it in sheets, so you can eat the whole thing in one sitting.
What was your probably favorite thing that we ate in Mexico City? If you could eat it one more time.
Favorite thing. Oh my gosh, there are just so many things.
Yeah, well, I'll start going over some of my highlights. I went to Pujol, which is a restaurant that's been ranked in, goodness, the top 10 of the world's 50 best restaurants. And I wrote a whole review. I was really looking forward to this restaurant. I think this year it was number 5 on the world's 50 best list. And that's really cool where you have this really great fine dining restaurant in Mexico City. I mean, we're not talking about France. We're not talking about like Tokyo or any other place in Western Europe where most of these accolades really seem to accumulate. But we're in Mexico City. And it's so great how the main cuisine is really focused on Mexican food and Mexican cuisine, Mexican flavors. And I loved the amount of corn that was in that whole preparation. And there's one in particular. It was like a tostada, and it had like these Brussels sprouts that were lightly charred. And then there's like this paste that went on the fried tortilla, and it was made from ants. I know it sounds kind of weird.
It was delicious.
It was delicious. Absolutely so amazing. I could not believe how great it tasted. And I know for some people, like, eating bugs is very strange because, well, you've never really eaten bugs, at least not on purpose. But
unless you get tricked into it. Like I did. But we'll talk about that later.
You got tricked into eating bugs?
Yes. When we were at that one place for that stewed meat thing.
A barbacoa?
Yes.
Oh, escamoles.
Yeah.
Escamoles or something like that. Yeah,
it was like that.
Yeah, she ate ant larva, by the way. Ant larva tacos.
Because they didn't have what I wanted. And then he's like, oh, well, this is really good. He recommended it. And I had no idea what it was. And I was like, okay, cool. And so like this taco, I think it was like three tacos, came out with these little white, like pill, like they, to me, they didn't look like ant larvae. It just looked like chunks of cheese that looked weird.
Yeah.
And I ate it and actually liked it.
Tasted like blue cheese. I did not like it. For me, it was too much. We didn't know what it was at the time. We just kind of got it because our server recommended it. So we kind of dug into it. And that was at Barbacoa Henry, I believe. No, no, not Barbacoa Henry. It was Barbacoa Hidalgues. Hidalgues? I don't know. Oh, crap, I can't even pronounce it. But anyways, it was on Netflix for... the Taco Chronicles for having like barbacoa. And so we went there, and by the way, the barbacoa was okay. It wasn't like the best if you only had a chance to go there, because barbacoa is usually like a weekend thing and they have longer opening hours at this barbacoa restaurant and on more days. So it's worth going to and trying, but there are other barbacoa restaurants that are really, really good. So
just the Eskimo lays were better than the barbacoa and those are bugs. It was funny because after our meal, I went to the bathroom and Chris Googled it to see what it was, and he came back and his face was like, so you ate ant larvae. I was like, oh, cool. That was delicious. I think.
Oh. Yeah. Well, sorry, back to Pujol, Well, it was really cool. I liked that dish a lot. Everything that they made, I really, really enjoyed. I just can't talk about how great it was. And if you do some research, some people liked the menu, some people don't. Some people like the things that they serve, and everyone is a critic. So if you trust me and the things I say about food, then I think that you'll like it. It's very much heavy on the corn side and the way they use different tortillas and the different types of corn that they use, the flavors. It was just beautifully done. Very, very well done. And when the price is pretty low, it was about $125 a person for a tasting menu at one of the best restaurants in the entire world. That's a great value, okay?
Like,
for me, it's not just how great the food is. It's like, how much am I paying for this great food? And we've done some great tasting menus, and we've been to some of the best restaurants in the entire world, too. In New York, in Thailand, in Spain, and all over the world, we've been to some great restaurants. And this is by far the cheapest tasting menu we've been to with a restaurant in like that top 10 list of the best restaurants in the entire world.
Oh, yeah. Straight up. Oh, my gosh. It was really good. And it was pretty casual, too. Because, you know, when we travel, we, you know, travel pretty lightly. And we don't bring like super nice clothes. And so, you know, don't let it scare you. It's not super stuffy. It's still pretty cash.
It is very cash. It's fun. It was fun to go there and. The food was amazing. So, and then Barbacoa Edison was one of my favorite things too. It was just this great little hole in the wall kind of place. And it's tough when you don't speak Spanish and sometimes you feel kind of dumb. But in Mexico City, at every restaurant we went to, everyone was so nice. And they just apologized for not speaking English. I'm like, no, you should not be apologizing to me.
No.
I'm sorry, I don't speak Spanish. And this lady kind of understood kind of what I was saying. And I just said like, you know, dos barbacoa tacos. So, or tacos de barbacoa and some consomme. So the consomme is the leftover residual liquid. So barbacoa, at least the way it's done in, you know, central Mexico, is they basically pit roast a lamb. And they have this pot at the bottom that collects all the juices that run off of the lamb, and they make this soup out of it. So whenever you get barbacoa, you should always ask for a little bowl of the consomme as well. Oh, it's a little smoky, a little gamey. It's wonderful. And then at Barbacoa Edison, they had all these different accoutrement toppings, and it was just fabulous. And they're making the blue corn tortillas right there too, just right off to the side. Wonderful experience. Well, then what were some of your other things?
So during that beautiful explanation of all those other foods, I think it was El Betin, what is one of my favorites, just because it was the first place that we went to eat at. And that holds like a really special memory to me because it was the first real Mexican street taco and it was absolutely amazing. We think we got Al Pastor and then Suadero. And it just kind of blew my mind how delicious it was. This one seems a little random, but it just kind of was super different. We were at, I don't remember the name, but it was that carrot cake, that weird different carrot cake with tarragon ice cream.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
I'll talk about the other carrot cake, but like that one was just super different. Instead of it being an actual cake, it was like cake, thin wafer type crackers. And then in between those layers were like a cream. And on top was like this beautiful, not super sweet, like I don't even think it was sweet at all, tarragon ice cream.
Yeah.
And it was just magical. Like it blended super well together.
Yeah, that was at Lardo. Lardo. It was a great, like, kind of like Italian kind of like mixed kind of restaurant. Yeah, it was, that was one of the best things I think I've ever eaten, that carrot cake. Just, you described it perfectly. It was just this kind of like layered wafer cake thing. And it was their interpretation of carrot cake and the tarragon ice cream. Tarragon is like an herb. So when you have something that's really sweet and then this kind of licorice-y kind of herb kind of comes in with the on an ice cream, it sounds strange. Somehow, it all just mingles together perfect.
Whoever made that was a genius. And then since I mentioned carrot cake, there's this place called Gueros, G-E-R-O-S, Cafe and like Pastelleria. Again, I'm sorry if I'm saying this incorrectly. But those baked goods every at that place is just amazing. Mm-hmm. We met the owner and he said that his wife makes all the baked goods. And that carrot cake blew my freaking mind. Like it was the best carrot cake I've ever had. It wasn't super sweet. That's the hard part. Like now that I'm getting older, I can't handle super duper sweet things anymore. And so I'm like, ugh, it's a little too sweet. Ugh, it's a little too sweet every time we get a dessert. But that was just, I don't know. It was just
amazing, well done.
Right? Like it was really good.
It was just this little tiny cafe, a literal just like hole in the wall. Really, I think like two seats on the inside, a little bit of like seating on the sidewalk, really great coffee that's perfectly done. And for some reason, a lot of places, they don't know how to steam a really good latte because there's actually a way to do it well to where the milk is all velvety and nice and it's not oversteamed so you can drink it right away. They did it perfect. And then they had this amazing carrot cake. And I tried to figure out what made it so good. I know there's definitely like walnuts in there and they used a pineapple. There are chunks of pineapple in there. And it sounds strange until you try it. It's worth it.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely carrots in there. That's all I know. Carrots. Hey, at least I can identify something.
Well, hey, and there's like extra carrots in there. It was like loaded. It was packed.
It was loaded. The thing is, okay, I learned this from Chris's mom, is that because his mom makes my second favorite carrot cake.
Yeah, she does.
Because his mom always talks about how things are too sweet or, you know, things have too much sugar. And so her carrot cake, she's like, oh, you have to put more carrots and cut your sugar in half.
And that's the key.
Extra carrots. And carrots are good for you anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Good for fiber. Something else that it's good for.
Yeah, yeah. Lots of health benefits. Might as well get your vegetables in a delicious way, especially in a sweet, cakey snack.
Yes.
with your coffee. So, Mexico City was great. It was a good way to start. Fantastic trip. Lots of great street food. And again, show notes of the page will have my blog post where I talk about the street food, the tacos, and the sit-in restaurants that we went to, as well as some things about safety. I wrote a blog post about the safety in Mexico City and how we felt pretty safe everywhere. We walked everywhere, day, night, all times, and never did we feel unsafe or weird. So it was good. It was actually one of the podcast episodes that I had with Rose from Where Goes Rose. She talked about Mexico City and that's what really turned me on to it. She's like, oh yeah, Mexico City is amazing. The food's wonderful. We talked about some of the safety things when it comes to being a solo female traveler and some of the things that she did to stay safe. And for the most part, you just do all the same things you do anywhere else. Don't do anything dumb.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like
it's all the same stuff.
Just you have common sense with the safety thing too. Like, especially with street food. So Chris mentioned like Squirt earlier, like that soda. I don't know if you've had a Squirt before, but out in Mexico City, they'll like give you Squirt and some ice. And then like they'll squeeze a lot of lime juice in there and then like salt on the rim. Like do not be afraid to drink anything off of the street. Like legitimately, like the people who live there, don't drink the water. So you don't have to worry about them giving you something that is going to be wrong because they don't want to get everybody else sick. So drink your agua frescas. And
Absolutely.
Drink a super delicious squirt with lime juice and salt. Like, I crave that a lot too. It's fantastic. Eat and drink everything.
That's right. Everything. It really is safe. And like the ice is made with purified water. And they all kind of get it from a few different factories in the city. So just don't drink tap water, and they don't use tap water really for anything. So you're fine. Just go ahead and make sure you eat the street food. Drink the things, and you'll be happy. You'll be very, very happy. All right. Well, after Mexico City, we went on to Lima, Peru. And Lima has been growing as this really crazy gastronomic destination. It has some of the best restaurants in the entire world and features amazing cuisines that we weren't expecting. And I just want to start off talking about Japanese food. Yes. Listen to me, everybody, and understand everything that I'm saying. I'm very, very serious. I would rather eat sushi in Lima, Peru than in Tokyo, Japan. That's right.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe you said it.
That's right.
Said it out loud.
That's right. I would rather eat sushi in Lima, Peru than in Tokyo, Japan. And I have eaten plenty of sushi in Tokyo, Osaka, and Kyoto, Japan. Through our travels, we've both eaten a lot of great sushi all around the world, and Lima has our favorite sushi, and for good reason.
Yeah, you would never expect Peru having the best sushi, and it's really because of the way that they dress it. Like, sushi in Japan is, you know, very basic. It's very classic, you know, wasabi, and then you can dip it in soy sauce. You know, you have your high-quality fish, and it's delicious. The rice is seasoned perfectly in Japan. I'm not saying it's not wonderful, but in Peru, the cuisine is called Nikkei, and it's Peruvian flavors on Japanese sushi. You can get a roll, and they'll top it with like something called ají amarillo. So it's this delicious, super flavorful, bright yellow sauce that goes on top of it. And it's just one of the very many different toppings or flavors that they add onto the sushi. Like, really, it makes no sense. Like, I didn't really know a whole lot about Peruvian food. And when we got there, we're like, wow, there's a lot of Japanese food around here. Like, how good is this actually going to be?
Yeah, it's crazy that there's this whole fusion. And I don't care if some people don't like the word when it comes to like cuisine fusion, but it really is its own unique flavor. So in the 20th century, there's a huge influx of Japanese immigrants to Lima for some reason. And they just kind of started making their own style of food that fit the culture of Peru. So it's pretty cool. Yeah, it's called Nikkei, like Tira said. And yeah, the ají amarillo was really cool. It's just this, just like you said, like a bright yellow pepper. It was like acidic. It was nice. And that's just like one of the things. And when you go to these Nikkei restaurants and you get sushi, every single piece of sushi comes with like a different topping, even like the rolls. And so even if you have like a salmon, like we went to Tier's favorite place called Matsui.
Matsui, yes. And oh my gosh.
They had a whole section of just like salmon nigiri, and they're all like topped with different things, like six different pieces of salmon. And they all have different toppings on there. Very elaborate toppings. And it's all made with like local ingredients with local kind of flavors. It's not just like a soy sauce base and like a sweetened like teriyaki or something. No. It's completely off the wall things you would have never expected. Maybe like shredded sweet potato, or I'm trying to think of like what else off the top of my head. Maybe like some truffle, like preserved truffles, or I don't know. It's like the possibilities are endless. Crispy garlic.
Chili oil. Who knows?
Chili oil.
Like, it was crazy. At Matsui, we got three different type of salmon nigiris. And when you eat salmon nigiri, it kind of all tastes the same because it's salmon. But there, they dressed each one so differently, and the flavors were drastically different to where it didn't even taste like you're eating salmon each time. And that blew my freaking mind. I was like, what is happening? I was like, I will take 17 more of these.
Yes, please.
Thank you.
Yes, please. And at Matsui, I'm remembering now what we got. It was called the Phoenix, and it was like this, like flame broiled salmon with crab and scallop on top with some sort of other sauce. It was just so freaking good.
I think it was cream cheese.
Cream cheese.
Yeah, we talked about that. I was like, oh, what was that? It's cream cheese.
It was so wonderful. Like, just it was creamy. You have different other seafoods on there, and you have that flame broiled taste. Oh, oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh, it was so good.
It really was amazing. My favorite place was called Shizen, and they had a lot of different varieties of nigiri. And of course, the rolls were fantastic and amazing as well. But there was a couple of that were just blew my mind. Like, I really liked there's a scallop one that they did that was just so amazing. And this really nice scallop that was seared on one side. And then they had like preserved truffles on top. And it just hit all the levels of flavor that you could possibly imagine, that you could possibly want from a scallop piece of sushi. And it was delicious and wonderful.
Wasn't that the place that had mackerel too?
Yes.
So mackerel, I feel like usually is not a good fish to eat raw. Like it has like it's
very
super
oily,
great.
Very, very fishy.
Yeah.
It's very fishy.
Not like a super great flavor, but they hit it out of the park. That was amazing.
Amazing. Oh, yeah. So Nikkei sushi, Japanese sushi was just a whole thing and a whole adventure. We ate like sushi like 3 to 4 times a week, like while we were there. And here's the crazy part. It's all really inexpensive. At least according with the conversion of the U.S. dollar, we would eat so much sushi and eat a couple entrees maybe, and we would spend like $50 for the best sushi of your entire life meal. And everyone, I feel like, just got better and better as we continued to eat and try different things.
Honestly, kind of it did. Well, it's just, it kind of, you know, makes it even more amazing because coming from America, like in Denver, like one sushi roll in Denver now is like $20.
$20.
For one roll. Like, that's crazy. That's like
bonkers.
Like one roll is like three rolls there or something. Yeah. It's just the comparison of just the quality and the price range is what really kind of just makes it even better.
Yeah. Well, then don't get me wrong. Traditional Japanese sushi is absolutely wonderful. We love it, but the variety, I'm telling you, like we ate so much sushi throughout Japan. Once you get like Toro, you know, or Otoro, like the really fatty belly of the tuna and other parts of the tuna, salmon, you go to like 5 different places, let's say in the downtown Tokyo area, they're all going to taste pretty similar. The only difference is if they were able to pick a higher quality fish, usually that'll be the difference maker. Because they're all going to have perfect sushi rice. They're all going to be cut perfectly. They're all going to be prepared perfectly. But the only difference is just the quality of the fish. So if they happen to find the better quality tuna or salmon or whatever it is. But in Lima, they have super high quality fish. Don't get me wrong. Super great. And then they have this really artistic, well-crafted toppings that go on these pieces. And it's just the best ways I see a chef expressing themselves is to go to Lima if they're in Japan and just make these amazing flavorful pieces of sushi.
Yeah, I think honestly one of my favorite toppings that we had on a sushi roll or even nigiri is sweet potatoes. And
yeah.
Sound like super delicious. I don't know. Like if you had sweet potatoes, you have a pretty good idea of what it might taste like, but you're wrong. You can't really fathom the flavor until you have it because you have this delicious contrast of texture because they're usually sliced really thinly. And it's just, I don't know, their sweet potatoes are different there. They're just so much better.
All the potatoes are different.
Oh, man, they have so many potatoes.
So many potatoes.
I'm pretty sure you mentioned on one of your episodes of how much I love potatoes. Like, legitimately, I could eat potatoes every day for the rest of my life. Boiled, mashed, in a stew.
Boil them, mash them, stick them in a stew.
That's right.
Lord of the Rings, anybody? Yeah, the cuisine besides the Japanese was just fantastic too. It really was. We didn't have a single bad meal. Everything was great. Everything we went to was really, really good. Well, actually, no, we had one bad meal.
We did?
Yeah. The dim sum place.
Oh my gosh. Oh, dang. That wasn't
this was that was a fluke, and I did not put this in my list because it was okay. So I saw this really good dim sum place in like the historical central area, and we got some, like, a couple of dumplings and stuff, the Chinese dim sum. And one of the things they brought out was, like, these pork shrimp dumplings. And they brought in this little container, and they opened it up. And so I take my chopsticks, I put the whole thing in my mouth and just chew and swallow. I'm like, huh, this one's kind of cold. I wonder. So I pick up another piece, and I bite it in half, and it's raw on the inside. Totally uncooked.
Yeah.
Pork and shrimp. I'm like, oh no.
And this is in Peru. Like, this is crazy. So, I was like, is that raw? He's like, I think so. Yeah. Like,
why would they serve us raw? Someone just didn't put it in the steamer. You know, they didn't steam it correctly. And it looked like it was cooked because it was in some sort of like soupy soy sauce. And it's just, anyway, so one bad meal. I didn't get sick, thank goodness.
Thank goodness. I was actually worried. I was like, oh my gosh. Throw up. Go to the bathroom and throw up.
Yeah, it's that was a weird one. We actually did not like that meal. So maybe one bad meal, but all the other ones were really good. It was very wonderful.
Oh, do you remember the chicharrón sandwiches?
Yeah.
So those were really good. I mean, we're talking about Japanese food, but this is like a Peruvian like staple is like the chicharrón sandwich, where it's like a not crispy pork piece of...
Well, it's like a roasted pork belly, and it's rendered down good enough, but it's not like a crispy chicharrón. It's something completely different. So don't think that you're going to bite into the sandwich, get nice crispy skin. That's not what it is.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
And I was disappointed, but it was still really good.
So really good.
And they put like a slice of sweet potato on there too. Mm-hmm. Man, that was great.
Yeah. So you have this really juicy, really fatty pork belly sliced, and then you have these fried sweet potatoes. You have a nice layer of that on a bun, and you can put all sorts of toppings on there, but usually it comes with like thinly sliced, usually like marinated red onion will go on there. And depending on where you go, sometimes they'll have some other things too. But I do recommend you trying this beverage called chicha, which is this like corn beverage that's sweetened. Super, super good. I mean, weird looking because it's this dark purple.
Yeah.
Kind of ominous. And it just goes perfectly with your chicharrón sandwich.
It's actually surprising. We went to the grocery store, I think the first or second day we got in Peru, and we saw purple corn. And I've never seen purple corn before. So I was like, oh my gosh, Chris, look, it's purple. It's purple corn. And then we figure out that's chicha. That's what they make chicha out of. And with corn, I would figure it would be more grainy. And so I didn't understand that that was actually corn, but it's really smooth and it's just refreshing. And it's perfect on a summer's day with a delicious chicharrón sandwich.
Yeah, and with all the food that they offer, with the growing gastronomical scene, there are so many different types of restaurants there that don't really follow or fall under any specific kind of category. What were some of your favorite restaurants besides, you know, the Nikkei sushis?
So that wasn't sushi. I would have to say probably my favorite one is called Siete. So it's, I wouldn't say Peruvian necessarily, but it was just absolutely amazing. Like, you couldn't even tell that there was a restaurant there. And you walked in, it was beautiful. It was like this dark wood. And, you know, we had a lot of seafood. Well, not a lot of seafood, but one of the dishes that I loved was the razor clams. And razor clams, if you haven't had them, are freaking amazing if they're prepared correctly and if they're purged correctly too. And I mean, each thing that we got just hit the mark. You know, I feel like that's why I like certain restaurants, is because there's nothing that I would like to change about anything. Like, we got a tomahawk pork chop. It was huge. And it was fairly cheap for it being a ginormous piece of meat. I mean, Chris wrote an article about it, and the pictures are, they don't really do it justice. And we got these beautiful shrimp, and the cocktails were amazing.
It was all around just great.
It was just really great.
And what was really cool, we found out about this restaurant because we were at a Nikkei restaurant called Tomo, and we sat at the bar, and one of the bartenders spoke English, and they served us great cocktails, great Nikkei sushi, all that sort of stuff. And one of my favorite questions I ask people when they're locals is, where do you like to eat? Not where should I eat, but where do you like to eat? Totally different questions with completely different answers. So he told me some of his favorite restaurants, and the one he really loved the most was Siete. And so I'm like, okay, we're going to go. And we went to Siete, and it was by far one of the best meals we've ever had. with the variety of flavors, very well crafted. There's a unique spice blends that they use from like Middle Eastern and from North Africa, just to kind of make things a little bit different. The Razor Clams had a touch of like Korean influence in there with some sort of like, with using probably gochujang, some sort of like, you know, hot pepper was in there. It was just super delicious. It was a very familiar flavor. So I'm just guessing, I'm spitballing here, that it was some sort of Korean flavor that was in it, but it's just, it wasn't like a Peruvian restaurant. It was, there's no real, I guess, thing it was except for contemporary, you know, the chef drew influences from these other parts of the world and made some amazingly delicious food.
I'm actually fine without like the label of it. Oh, is it Peruvian? Is it Middle Eastern? Is it whatever? It's its own thing. And each item that they make is really, it's perfect. Let me talk about one of my other favorites. So I'm the type of person who loves old people or like really cute mom and pop places, like Chris's too. But I mean, when people are super nice to me and you can tell, like, I don't know, like, when they're super duper nice,
old person who's like our server or someone who greets us, Tira's gonna love the restaurant, especially when they're really nice old people. Like, oh, come on in. Welcome. Grab a seat. Tira's already gonna love it. I know.
And they were genuinely like some of the nicest people. Yeah. We walked in and they had a warm, super nice smile. And I was like, oh, well, I'm loyal to this place forever.
What restaurant was it?
It's called El Pez Amigo. It's actually not too far from where we were staying, but one of the things, actually, this is probably one of my favorite things that we had in Lima, was this sea urchin ceviche. So in Peru, they're famous for their ceviches. Like, it's a normal thing. Like, Peruvians love ceviche. And we have, well, really, Chris has this kind of obsession with a sea urchin, and I love it too. But this specific dish, I swear, was really nothing but sea urchin. And usually with ceviches, it has like other things mixed into it. But this was this is like 98% sea urchin.
Yeah, it was really bright yellow. So they had that ají amarillo sauce in there. So this yellow pepper sauce, lots and lots of lime, red onion, and that's really it. It was just kind of like these enormous tongue-sized like sea urchin in there. And it was really delicious, just like a flavor of the ocean. And with lots of lime, it was just such a different type of dish that wasn't expensive. If you try to get sea urchin in America, like on sushi or something like that, you're paying out the butt for it. Here, it's just like a normal thing to eat. Yeah. Like sea urchin's like normal part of their normal dinner. Like, oh, okay, we're gonna get sea urchin ceviche, or we're gonna get sea urchin this or that. It's just normal. It's easy. It's super easy to find.
Oh yeah, I love that place. Oh, they were so nice.
So nice.
If we lived there, we'd probably go there every day.
We would.
We're pretty loyal to. Like, mom and pop restaurants are like really nice, kind people wherever we go. Like, we're like, ah, we're gonna shop there. Like, if we go grocery shopping, like usually at a small market or something, and if they're really patient with us, we'll continue shopping there for the entire time. Yeah. Even if it's a little bit more expensive than like a bigger name store, you know, if they take the time and being patient with us since we don't know the language, and you know, I love it. It's one of my favorite things. I just love it when people are super nice, because I feel like I'm super nice.
You are super nice. You're the nicest. That's why everyone loves you. It's true. Everyone falls in love with Tira when they meet her. She's like the most nicest, kindest person. And she has this beautiful, infectious smile. Nothing you can do about it. When she smiles at you, you're like, oh, she's wonderful. I'm like, yes, I know. So I had to scoop you up when I did. I can't let anyone else marry you.
Anyways. Oh my gosh.
Well,
I feel like this is a mutual scooping.
Yeah.
Because you're seriously the most amazing person in the entire world. And you're super nice too. Mm-hmm. We're just super nice together.
Yes. Oh, okay. Well, back to the food. I actually had some surprising best things in Lima. I had this chicken tikka masala from this really small place, and goodness, it was seriously like the best chicken tikka masala I think I've ever had. It's some of the best Indian food I had outside of India. Really, this little place in Lima just serving up the best freaking curries. And we tried a couple of them too. We tried the butter chicken. We tried some lentil dishes that they had. And they have a tandoori in there. It's this unbecoming kind of place. It's called a Dasu Cucina Deli. And it's just this little hole in the wall. And there's like a few seats on the inside. And that's it. Yeah, so some of the best Indian food. And I couldn't believe it. And what I loved about the chicken tikka masala was just, it was very flavorful, really spicy. I told him, like, yeah, give me the spicy stuff. Because surprisingly, throughout South America, there's really not that much spicy food. It's actually hard to find. And man, they turned up the spice for me. Wonderful with rice and like their garlic naan. Wonderful. I mean, super, super delicious. And you wouldn't think about finding that place. And it's kind of like hidden. It's not around anything. It's kind of off one of the main roads that goes through the center of Barranco neighborhood. And you just kind of stumble upon it. There's all these like car repair shops around it. And there's just this little Indian restaurant.
Yeah.
Super well done. Yeah.
I think literally only like five people could sit inside. Like it was really small. And I think what makes it so much more delicious than just like regular Indian food anywhere else is that the chicken that they used is tandoori chicken. So it's like perfectly tender. It's has that flavor of like the tandoori. Oh man, like I love tandoori chicken. And the fact that they used that in all of their chicken like dishes, oh man, it was amazing. And usually with Indian food, I have to kind of be in the mood for it. I can't just eat it anytime. Sometimes I'm a moody eater because I'm like, oh, well, we just had that. Or I'm like, I don't know. But that place was freaking amazing. I probably could have eaten that every single day, yeah. Probably.
And then there was a burger place, too, that had my best burger. The best burger I ever had. And it was a place called Burger Boy. And it's on like the far west side of Miraflores neighborhood. What in the world? It's just this little spot, and it's run by a Japanese Peruvian, and they just make classic kind of like American style cheeseburgers. Nothing fancy. When it comes to burgers, I'm kind of a purist. I don't want truffle oil. I don't want fancy cheeses or anything or elaborate toppings. Keep your Swiss. Keep your mushrooms. I just want an amazing, delicious, well-charred cheeseburger with American cheese, with lettuce, tomato, onion, you know, mayonnaise, ketchup, mustard, that sort of thing. And this place, just their normal cheeseburger, man, is perfect. The perfect cheeseburger.
It was the perfect classic burger. I don't really like cheese on my burgers. Don't judge me. It just adds this different flavor that doesn't work well for me. I like onions, ketchup, pickles, tomatoes, lettuce. I like everything else except for the cheese. And I mean, it was really cute too. Like it was very minimalist and
very minimalist. It was really cool.
It was really cute. It kind of felt like we're in Japan for some reason.
Well, there's some Japanese writing. It seems like it's the style of what they would make in Japan for a little like burger shop, you know? It was really, really cool. Oh. Anyway, so Lima.
This is the hard part about talking about our travels is that we miss it so much and we get super hungry. Like I'm
hungry right now.
Like I keep telling Chris, like whenever we go back home and we crave these things, it's just, I'm like, all right, we have to learn how to make this. We have to learn how to make this. And then usually it's one of the first world struggles.
True story.
Of craving delicious food.
True story. Lima was really surprising. I mean, I got to talk about one more restaurant, Mito, one of the best restaurants in Latin America. For years, it was like number one as the best restaurant in Latin America. It's this Japanese Nikkei restaurant. And it was really the restaurant that really brought Nikkei to like the global scene. And when you win the awards of the best restaurant in Latin America and you're a Japanese restaurant, it's pretty crazy. And we didn't do the tasting menu, even though that's really popular. We wanted to do something different and try other things on the menu. So one of the highlights was this katsu sandwich, and it was made with the sweetbreads of, I think, probably beef sweetbreads. I'm not sure if it was pork sweetbreads.
I mean, it was a pretty big piece, so I would say beef, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, and it was just well done. It didn't taste like a gland. So a sweetbread is the thymus gland of a cow, and usually it's like a throwaway thing. Most people don't cook with them, but a few chefs and a few cuisines actually really enhance it and make it really, really good. And so, yeah, sweetbreads, one of my favorite things in the entire world. They deep fried it, put it on between two pieces of bread with some sort of sauce. oh, what in the world?
It really, it's crazy.
Blanker's so good.
It really didn't taste like sweetbreads. And the texture didn't have that sweetbread texture because it can be kind of, I don't know, not gelatinous, but not like your average meat. But if you've ever had like a Japanese katsu sandwich, it really kind of tasted just like it. Like you would have never suspected that it was the thyroid of a cow or pig.
Yeah, super delicious. And they actually had razor clams too that were really good. These razor clams, they were dressed up really nice with some tabico, some like caviar, some truffle, something or other, some preserved truffle, some other sort of like emulsion of garlic and stuff. It was just so wonderful and it was so beautifully plated and you just couldn't stop eating them. It was one of those addictive dishes where you just have to like get another and another and another, and all the components kind of refreshes your palate so you're not too fatigued from all the flavors. Beautiful, wonderfully executed. Oh man. Yeah. One of the best restaurants you could possibly go to. I just fell in love with the food in Peru because of that restaurant. It was one of the first restaurants we went to. Fabulous. If you get a chance to go to Maido, absolutely take the chance, make the reservations, and just go. You're eating at one of the best restaurants in entire Latin America, one of the best restaurants in the world. And it's not super expensive.
And you don't have to eat the tasting menu. Like yeah. Most places like that will not allow you to just order off menu like
yeah,
that.
That's, like a la carte.
Yeah, a la carte. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great thing that you can try those different things. You can, if you have a smaller budget, you can only get like one or two things. Just get one or two things and still try and eat at this amazing, amazing, wonderful restaurant. So yeah, Maido, last thing we're going to touch on for Lima. And then after Peru, we went to Argentina and Buenos Aires. So I didn't know too much about Buenos Aires. I know it was a place I've wanted to go to because it's this huge city in Latin America and it had this European feel. And I know they had lots of beef. I didn't know how much beef they actually had. And the amount of grill beef restaurants that they had was crazy. Almost every single part of the city has like their own neighborhood kind of spot, their own like little high-end spot. And every corner seemed like there's some sort of grill or what they call parrillas there. So you go to and you go to Buenos Aires, you'll see these parrillas everywhere. You'll see the signs. Delicious. Really next level steak.
I don't understand why it's so good there. Like it makes no sense. Like, oh, Tara, what's your favorite place in Buenos Aires? It is Don Julio. Here's the thing. Like he was talking about how the beef is just so amazing. The steak is really good. Don Julio is like the top place to get the beef, like to get steak. You know, I feel like I've always liked steak, you know, before going there. And I've always kind of preferred like filet mignon or something less fatty. But being there and all the steaks being cooked over charcoal, like it changes your perspective and kind of your palate. Like after that, like I love the fat on steaks now. Just because it holds so much flavor. And Don Julio, it was really magical. We were really, really lucky to be able to eat there twice while being there. Like we got there, we were actually staying across the street. So our Airbnb was literally right across the street, like right at that corner. So every time we left our apartment, we could see Don Julio and just everybody waiting for hours just to get into this place. And so...
Yeah, Don Julio ranked one of the best restaurants in the world. But what's cool about that is it's a steak restaurant. It's a steakhouse. It's not this fancy place. There are no tweezers involved in the plating. There's no intricate designs inside. It's just like a normal kind of place. And I know we've talked about the best restaurants a couple times because that's what I guess a lot of people are searching for. But there are all these places throughout Latin America I love the most are just these like kind of hole in the wall or mom and pop kind of places. And what's cool about Don Julio, it still gives you that local restaurant kind of feel without feeling like this stuffy fine dining restaurant. Seriously, you look inside, it looks like a steakhouse and you see this open kitchen, this wonderful grill just sizzling away with all these great steaks on there. And not just at Don Julio, but all the restaurants that have grills, they all use charcoal. or they use hardwood, and they make their own like charcoals from hardwood, which is crazy. Okay. And if you think it doesn't make a difference, you can by far just, I could blind taste test something that was grilled on a gas grill or something that was over hot charcoals. And there's a massive, just complete different flavor difference when you cook over hard charcoals.
Once you go charcoal, you never go back. Like, that's the thing. When we left Argentina and we got steak, I was like, this isn't the same.
It's not the same.
Like, can we get a charcoal grill when we get home? Like, this is just the only way to eat steak or beef or any sort of meat.
I go into details when I write about Don Julio for getting in and stuff, but basically it's a challenge. So you have to stand in line for a little while, or you can get lucky or be a little strategic. But once you're in, any sort of steak you get's wonderful. And they take a lot of time when it comes to their meat. So they have their own ranch that has their own cattle, and they select their own cuts, and then they wet age it for, I think, like 25 days or whatever, and then they grill it. And usually I'm a dry age kind of person, but wonderful, absolutely unbelievable how crazy these steaks tasted. It was better than any steak I've ever tasted in my entire life. The best steak I've ever had. And I've eaten my fair share of cow all around the world.
We've eaten a lot of steak. Yeah, we've eaten a lot of steak.
And it's a Don Julio. It really is phenomenal. Oh my goodness. I cannot believe how delicious the steak is. And we had like two different kinds. We had like their T-bone, or what we would call a porterhouse in the United States, how thick it was. And then their bone and ribeye. Crazy. Delicious.
And I think the best part too is that like it's not crazy super duper like expensive.
No.
You know, I feel like I remember going to a place in New York City to get a really nice steak, and we paid
$120 for one T-bone steak.
Yeah. We paid so much money for this steak. And it was not great. it was not worth the money. Whenever we
the steakhouse will go unnamed.
Yeah.
But
whenever we spend money on something that's super expensive and it's not delicious, we get upset. But with Don Julio, with it being super popular and it being the best steak ever, it's not like a bank breaker. Like it's really affordable for the quality of the meat. I don't know. It's just so good.
Well, even the more expensive steaks are right around $30 US. And so you can go there. If you're just by yourself, you can get a really good steak. You can get a side and be super happy with spending around $60. Think about that. The best steak of your life, all of it for like $60 US. It's unbelievable. If you go to some of the best steak restaurants in the entire world, you're going to be paying over $100 for their best cut of meat. So trust me.
And it'll fall short because there's no charcoal. No charcoal.
No charcoal.
I'm telling you, it makes a difference. It's so good. I can't even. It's
crazy. It really makes this drastic difference when you have this smokiness, because to understand how the charcoal works, when it's cooking, fat will start to render. That fat drips onto the charcoals, causes a reaction that causes a flare-up. That flare-up creates smoke, okay? And that kind of smoke goes into the meat, not like a smoked meat, like a barbecue, but you can taste a little bit of that char, and that charring is very delicious. And when you have beautiful fat on the meat, and it takes a little bit of that char too, you have these little good crispy little bits everywhere. And so wonderful. And then they're just so smart how they kind of had this whole unique, delicious beef grill culture.
And it really is beautiful fat. Like the fat is nutty and delicious and a little sweet at the back end, but it's really perfect. Like I'm not a fat eating type of person. Well, at least I wasn't, but Argentina changed me. I'm a different person now. Like we had steak today for lunch and I favored the fat. I was like, ooh, give me the fat instead.
Yeah.
Forget this meat. Give me the fat instead.
Well, yeah. So Don Julio, they do a lot of great things. They have their own farms too. And one of our favorite things was like their heirloom tomato salad, which is just like different varieties of their heirloom tomatoes with olive oil, salt, and pepper. And we just couldn't get enough. Each tomato had a very unique, distinct flavor. It's like the best tomato you'll ever eat, and it's just delicious. And we couldn't stop. Absolute must. And they had some of the best charcuterie too. They make their own charcuterie in house, and we can go on and on for about Don Julio. Wonderful, delicious restaurant. And if you go to Argentina, you have to make it a priority. But there are other steak restaurants too. Well, what were some of your favorite steak restaurants?
So My tastes are a little bit different than Christopher's. Probably anywhere that I got entraña, so the skirt steak. So, you know, this is not like the best place to get a steak, but it's called El Pinguino de Palermo. And so they had skirt steak. And with skirt steak, if it's cooked properly, there's this like crust on the outside, and then like the fat melts inside your mouth. That's probably one of my favorite ones. And then La Carniceria, it was one of the first ones that we went to. We waited in this torrential downpour. It was super cold. We were sitting on the like patio, like trying not to get wet. Our umbrellas are around our bodies so we can kind of like shield ourselves from the rest of the rain. And La Carniceria was more of like a new age steakhouse. You know, it's not like a classic older style Argentinian steakhouse. It has more.
Well, it's just the new age kind of, it's just a new age kind of steakhouse. You have young chefs, young wait staff. How they're fixing up these steaks are different. When you go to these steakhouses in Buenos Aires, they're going to come just like steak and just whatever side that you order. Here they have like a pumpkin puree that came with our steak with like sprinkled with nice sea salt on top. Or when you order a sausage, which they always have, like the chorizo sausage or the morcilla, the blood sausage, they dress it up. You know, they have some other things involved with it. So when we got the chorizo, it came with over easy eggs and roasted potatoes and sweet peas, which was very different. We went to a lot of steak places and no one else does anything with their sausages but La Carniceria.
Yeah, like no toppings, no nothing. It's usually just a plain piece of sausage steaming from your plate. But every single piece of that chorizo plate at La Carniceria just fit perfectly. Like it didn't make sense in my brain. I would have never put all those things together.
It's just crazy, the different varieties of steak restaurants, and each one kind of specializes in different things, and they'll have their own style of doing it. So when you go to Buenos Aires, try them. Try as many as you can, and you'll find your own favorite, and you'll find out why you like some things more than others, and they'll have their own specialties along the way. And restaurants like El Pinguino, like Tira mentioned, has like everything. It's like a neighborhood kind of restaurant. They have a grill, they make pizza, they do breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and they're constantly open. And I know that sounds kind of strange just to have a restaurant that has everything, but when you're like a neighborhood spot, it's nice that you have a reliable source like that. Because in Buenos Aires, they have the siesta in the afternoon. So a lot of restaurants between 3 and 6 will close. And if you're an American who's not even that used to having that happen to them, it's kind of tough to find a restaurant. So for us, El Pinguino was actually a really good, like reliable place we could go to and get anything we wanted that was Argentinian.
Plus, it has a penguin on it, and penguins are my favorite animal. So, I mean,
can't go wrong.
I like things for different reasons, but the penguin was cute. And plus, it's a really old restaurant, which is really cool. Like, it's perfect. It was really great. And we were actually in Argentina during the World Cup too. It was really fun. Man, Argentina, can't believe they won. It was really intense. I mean, obviously people take their soccer seriously, but really anytime, especially if we're in our apartment, and there was a game going on and they scored, or literally anything, you can hear the entire city roar. Like, I have never heard or experienced that ever in my life. And I'm actually a little sad we weren't there for the final, just to see how intense it got. But oh man, it was really cool.
They take their soccer very seriously, and they take their sport seriously. If you go into some restaurants, you'll see shrines of the soccer players in these old restaurants. It's crazy. Like, oh wow, they really like these soccer players. And yeah. Now Messi, the like star soccer player of Argentina and of the world, will have his face enshrined in these restaurants as well.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. Like, I'm surprised it wasn't already happening during the World Cup. Yeah.
So much good food. I could just keep going on and on. And that's why we had to make this in two different parts, because there's just so much food and so many different things that we can talk about, the dishes and the different experiences. But yeah, part two is coming. So if you're listening to this now, wait until next week and you'll have part two with the rest of our restaurants and favorite places that we've been to. But if you're already wanting the show notes of this page, go to nomadicfoodist.com slash Latin America trip. That's nomadicfoodist.com/Latin America trip for the links, the blog posts that I have written on all the things that we've talked about, the best restaurants and how to avoid getting sick and is Mexico safe and all that sort of stuff, to find all those important resources so you can help plan your own trip through Latin America. If you like this episode, please hit that subscribe button on your device, no matter what platform that you are on. That way you get a brand new interview and episode with travel experts and amazing food stories from around the world. Thank you for listening, and remember, eat with an adventurous heart, no matter where you go.